abilities and all the capabilities, building all your hopes and dreams and all the possibilities. It ain't rocket surgery, but maybe it is. Oh, come on down, we're gonna sit around, we're gonna get into your business. Get into your business, that's right, get into your business. Oh, we'll get into your business.
Welcome to the Small Business Miracles Podcast. I'm Jeff Randolph. This Small Business Podcast is brought to you by EAG Advertising and Marketing. We're going to talk about marketing, and we're also here to celebrate entrepreneurs. We have marketing news and advice that business owners can use to keep moving forward. This week, we're talking with Jason Camus from Sertoma International. But first, we've got another small business marketing tip to talk about.
We'll get into your business.
In today's marketing tip, we should sit down for a counseling session and talk about why people don't want to hear from you anymore. Specifically, I'm talking about email and your email unsubscribes. If you're using a modern email system to send your mail, and really, you really, really should, unsubscribes are handled for you and your email system won't allow you to keep breaking the law and sending to people who have opted out of receiving messages from you. But since it's automatic, are you paying attention to that number of unsubscribes? We generally want that email unsubscribe rate to be well below 1% of your list. And if you're practicing good data hygiene, you're keeping that list fresh and you're purging people who won't ever open your messages so you get good deliverability and you know that you're providing value to your subscribers. Now, people will still unsubscribe from your list, and that's fine. You want a nice, clean list at the end of the day, so we want to let them go. But I know when you're running those email campaigns, we tend to take some of that unsubscribe number personally. I'm here to counsel you and say that there are all kinds of reasons people unsubscribe, and a lot of them don't have anything to do with you. Like, they no longer need the product or service, or they move, or they purchased one, or they, you know, subscribe to your service, or they only subscribe to get that 10% discount that you offered them that one time, and now that's done. They don't need it anymore. So instead, focus on what you can do to counter the other reasons people unsubscribe, like making sure you don't send too many emails, or you're not sending irrelevant content to them, or even that you're being too repetitive with your messaging and that's all they ever see from you. We're starting to see more people unsubscribe because they feel emails are becoming too personal and data privacy becomes an issue. So you want to keep an eye on that. You can control those things. Either way, keep working on making great email content and don't spend too much time being sad to see someone go from your email list. Keep reaching out to grow that list, and you'll never miss the ones who leave. And that's today's marketing tip.
We'll get into your business.
All right, we're here in the featured show section of our show. I'm here with Jason Camus. He's the executive director of Sertoma International. Jason, welcome to the show.
Good morning, Jeff. Thanks for having me.
We're happy to have you. I want to like make sure everybody has a good level set of what Sertoma is. You founded in 1912, so we're not talking. This is a long-standing organization here that we're talking about. Tell us what Sertoma International is.
Sure thing. So Sertoma was founded here in Kansas City in 1912, as you mentioned, and I think we talk about ourselves as like the third oldest and service organization out there. And there was three guys who wanted to get in, believe it or not, to a Rotary Club, couldn't do it. And they decided, you know what, we're going to go out and form our own.
Okay.
And so they formed Sertoma. And at the time, it was called the Cooperative International, or Cooperative Club. And then it became an international group later on. It had clubs all over the country. Mm-hmm. And our name actually is a concocted name. It's our name that we came up with in around 1950.
Okay.
And Sertoma stands for Service, Sir, to Mankind. So hence the Sertoma. And that was a member of ours. And I think what happened in the early 1950s, there was some confusion about our name along with co-ops out in the country. And so they said, well, we got to do this. So they had this competition, and that's where the name came from. And so it's been Sertoma ever since. And so we've always been based here in Kansas City. Mm-hmm. We're structured where we have service clubs all over the country in the United States, Canada, and Mexico. Mm-hmm. And we've had some other international locations in the past. And basically all of those clubs are independent entities. They're autonomous. They can serve their community however they see fit. Mm-hmm. However, nationally, we work in the realm of hearing health,
right?
And we provide hearing health programs and for communities and for affiliates and for our members. And so we have a dual membership structure. So clubs are members of us, but then members are members of us. And we have a small staff here that basically provides the back end support for all of their activities across the country.
Man, spectacular. And hearing health is the focus. Let's talk about, I don't know, whether we talk about the state of hearing health these days or really just, you know, what is Sertoma doing to combat or to help out, I guess. We wouldn't say combat hearing health. That's not the right way to say that. Yeah, what are we doing to help out hearing health? How does that look?
And it's interesting because hearing health is so broad,
sure.
Right? I mean, we talk about, you know, there's the protection, you know, using earplugs when you go to a concert. Mm-hmm. And then there's the how do we help people who have hearing issues, you know, whether it's a hearing aid, an amplifier device, or something much more advanced such as cochlear implants and so on. And then even in our structure, we say hearing health, but we also have a number of clubs that serve the deaf community. And I have no hearing background. I came to Sertoma 2.5 years ago, and it's been eye-opening to me. And so I've had to learn a lot. And what, you know, as an outsider with very little knowledge and very little background, mm-hmm. I take it and I'm like, okay, I can see where the deaf community, for instance, has an issue with how we use language here, or this could, you know, and so we're trying to serve all these different communities. And because our clubs are autonomous, they all have four clubs, for instance, that have deaf camps, deaf and hard of hearing camps.
Okay.
And they're very unique in how they're operated. And so I go to visit them and learn a little bit more, but we span the spectrum, and mm-hmm. hearing health is kind of the umbrella that we use. And hearing health has really just become a big issue. I suppose it's always been an issue, but mm-hmm. it's really come more to the forefront.
More
visible. The last 5 or 10 years, especially, and it will continue to do so, especially when you have things like how poor hearing health leads to cognitive decline, mm-hmm. you know, dementia and Alzheimer's, right. And you're seeing more of that. But just in general, things like over-the-counter hearing aids have made people realize, and then coming out here soon, AirPods.
Right.
You know, AirPods can double as a hearing aid, essentially, or as an entry-level hearing aid. And so that's going to hopefully elevate and get people like you and I who maybe we have hearing issues and we don't want to recognize it. And the one thing I always tell people we can't do is we can't fix selective hearing.
True.
I often get women who be like, oh, can you tell me how I can help my husband hear me better? I'm like, sorry, ma'am, that I cannot do.
He can hear you. He can hear you. He just isn't doing a very good job at listening.
Sure. Exactly. Sure, exactly.
Because there's also the hearing aid project
yep.
that takes hearing aids that have been used and are no longer needed. You refurbish those and provide those to people who need them. A tremendous outgrowth of Sertoma.
Yeah, and that has grown astronomically. You know, we started the hearing aid project about 7 or 8 years ago. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we didn't know really where that was going to go. But the idea, a lot of our clubs over the years have, they call them SHARP programs. So it's the Sertoma Hearing Aid Recycling Project. Mm-hmm. And they're localized version of our National Hearing Aid Project. And we still have one, for instance, in Topeka. Or we have them up in Nebraska. We have one in Springfield, Illinois. We decided to do this nationally as an opportunity to bring exposure to it. And we went from, when I first started, you know, staff were like, well, we get 3,000 or 4,000 hearing aids. I'm like, well, I looked at all the boxes. I'm like, something tells me we get more than that. Let's start counting them. And, you know, we just didn't track until
right,
then. So
right.
Now we track. This last year, we took in over 26,000
wow.
donated hearing aids.
Holy cow.
So we, you know, we get about 15,000 packages a year that are shipped to us, and they come from individuals, you know, your mom, your grandma mm-hmm. passes away. You don't know what to do with your hearing aids. You Google, you go online, donate hearing aids. We're probably going to come up in the top half of the page on Google, mm-hmm. Anywhere in the country. So we get those. We get them from Lions Clubs because Lions Club they've collected eyeglasses for years. Mm-hmm. They also, in a lot of areas, collected hearing aids. Well, they're moving out of that and they're partnering more with us.
Okay.
So we're getting we get a mm-hmm. lot of hearing aids there. We get them from clinics, anywhere you can get new hearing aids. You might have old ones. You decide you want to recycle. They'll refer people to us. And so they just come in, and then sometimes clinics will send us a whole shipload. Mm-hmm. So we'll get, you know, 3,000 hearing aids a month. We refurbish those mm-hmm. That are new in our program. So we want people to get good quality hearing aids. We'll take anything. So we get hearing aids that are 20 years old, mm-hmm. but in our program, we use hearing aids that are 3 years old or newer because we can warranty them. And that warranty is good for low-income individuals who not otherwise afford them. And for those out there, many people know the cost. I think the average cost, you'd see different things in the media, but it's around $4,200, $4,400 for a set of hearing aids. And that's the expensive aspect you know, hearing health. And we partner with audiologists across the country, hospitals, university-based clinics, private practices. We have 130, 140 providers that will fit patients. They typically do it for free. They use our product, and we provide the hearing aids. And the patient, there's no cost to the patient. And they just have to meet our qualifications, which is they're low income, so 200% of the poverty level or below. Mm-hmm. And we're fitting hundreds of patients a year all across the country, as well as supporting other programs that are doing that already. So if you already have, if you're in Denver, Colorado, and you've already got a program where you do that, but you need, say, some extra hearing aids, they can reach out to us. We'll provide hearing aids to their program. And it's a great way to keep them out of landfills and put them into people's ears that can use them.
Yeah, keep them in use. I know that my grandmother's hearing aids were donated to Stratoma. So spectacular. It's good to see them have another life and be put to good use. Let me switch a little bit and talk about your career, because and kind of where you've come from and how you then approach Stratoma, because you're in the nonprofit world, but you also have this entrepreneurial background. You're been the executive director of several notable organizations, but also chambers of commerce. You're entrepreneurial, and I know the way you think about how you approach the business problem. So now you find yourself in an organization that's been around for 100+ years, and traditionally we'd think that's a pretty big ship that you've got to, you know, try to navigate. And being an entrepreneur gives you that mindset. How do you approach that? How do you approach kind of driving where Stratoma goes?
You know, it's interesting because, and I bring that up when I go out and visit our clubs and our partners around the country. I often talk about, you know, they don't know who I am. I mean, I'm just this guy from Kansas City area, and they're, you know, and so I'm in Florida. I'll be in Florida visiting a half dozen of our clubs next week, and I always want them to know a little bit about me and where I come from. And, you know, I started doing service when I was in college. I didn't do anything really as a kid growing up, but in college, and I kind of got that bug, and I learned, you know what, I can make an impact in the world, mm-hmm. and I can do good, but I can also do good in this context where I can be profitable, I can make money, and I can give back. It's kind of this win-win across the board.
Right.
And I think our clubs think that way. I think sometimes people just forget that that entrepreneurial side, that just because we're a nonprofit doesn't mean we can't make a profit,
right? Sure.
You know, and you hear that a lot, and we can still do good things, and we have to operate like a business because we've got to be responsible. We've got to think about revenues and costs and expenses and where our money's come from, who our clientele is that we're serving, and so forth. And so, you know, when I came to Stratoma, I said, you know, we're going to be a little more entrepreneurial. Mm-hmm. Now, the flip side is there's certain things I do that are completely different to Stratoma, but also not what I would consider I would ever really do in my entrepreneurial life. And that's like, you know, I tell staff all the time, our job for so long, our organizations, when you get big, you tend to say no to everything.
Sure.
You know,
sure.
If you're the federal government, if you're a local government, if you're an old organization, it's easier to say no. This is what we do.
Yeah, here's our lane. This is the lane we stay in. And this, our forefathers have never done that.
Yes. Yeah. And so I tell, you know, and I feel like, you know, it in the industry of service organizations, the Stratomas, the Lions, and so forth, a lot of these organizations have declined over the years. Membership has declined, particularly in North America. And mm-hmm. it's neither here nor there. Society's changing. And so as I tell the staff, our job is to do more, say yes, and figure out how to make it work, mm-hmm. then say no, and then make people jump through hoops to try and make it work. And so we say yes, we say yes to a lot of things. And maybe they're sometimes out of our lane. Maybe sometimes they're like, well, this is a marginal win for us or a marginal victory. But if we can see how it works and it works well, maybe it's something that we can replicate and pass out to our clubs or to our partners around the country. And so We're doing a little bit more of, you know, it's kind of the gamble. And that's part of being an entrepreneur is gambling and saying, now, when you're an entrepreneur, you tend to say, okay, these are my potential customers. Mm-hmm. You know, you can't go into business thinking everyone is my customer. So we don't do that either. We don't go in saying, well, we're going to work in eyesight. Because one, that's not what we do. Two, there's a great organization out there that does it.
Right.
So we stay within our lane, but it's still taking on more risks than maybe what an organization like ours has in the past.
Yeah, I guess that's the benefit of having that club structure where you can have these small incubators of different ideas, see what works, and let them run with it, offer that support, and then when you've got a winning formula, you know, spread that around. Give that information away.
Yeah, and you know, I often talk to when I talk with our clubs and our groups out there, you know, ultimately they're the product. The product happens in the community. It doesn't happen here in Kansas City or at a national headquarters of any organization. The product happens in the community. And so our job is to model things, to try things out, to pull in those best practices. Mm-hmm. So if we see a club, we've got some clubs that do some amazing work. You know, we have a club in Chicago that worked in the 1960s. They started working with individuals with intellectual disabilities. At the time, that was a new thing in that. Mm-hmm. Now they have an organization there that has 650 employees and $47 million budget. Wow. I mean, it dwarfs who we are as a national organization. And it's called Sir Thomas Starr Services. And they're known all over Chicago and Illinois for the services they provide to that particular community. And so we can take that, learn from them, share that with other groups as you could do this if you want to do this. And they just have to decide what is it that we want to do in our community.
Yeah, just how can we best magnify our service to mankind?
Exactly.
Spectacular.
Exactly.
It works together so well. Tell me, what's next for Sir Thomas and the Hearing Aid Project and everything else? Where do you go from here? What's on the horizon?
So I think a big thing, you know, obviously hearing health, and I don't want to say we're doubling down because we've always done it, but we're doubling down in the sense that we're taking on some new programs and new projects that have actually done quite well across the country. So for instance, we partnered with a national manufacturer that provided us with hearing amplifiers. And so we have a program called Amplified Hearing, and it basically, an amplifier is an entry-level device to help people hear who maybe might only have mild hearing loss, or maybe in our case, we find a lot of populations either don't want to take care of a hearing aid or they don't have the means to. And a good example would be a homeless population or unhoused population. And so we've had clubs and groups that have reached out and said, hey, can we want to donate these. We want to use these at our local homeless shelter. Mm-hmm. And so they're not really purchasing. They get them for the cost of shipping and handling. We provide them basically for free. And they provide them, and they can be given out as a disposable device. We have hospitals that use it. We have hospice groups. And so we're looking at programs like that where we can have an impact and help our clubs have an impact in their community. And so we have other things of that nature. We're working on a couple national partnerships that will ideally, if they roll out next year and they come to fruition, we'll be able to collect more hearing aids. We'll be able to partner to put more. We're always looking for more audiologists. That's the biggest challenge. There's always people out there who want to who need the services. We need more people who are willing to help fit those patients. And we try to make it as easy as possible for them on the hearing side. And so we'll continue to grow some of that. The Hearing Aid Project will, I think the hearing aids are, they're growing every week and every day. And so we will continue to do that. From the Sir Thomas side, that's a little bit more challenging. Mm-hmm. It's how do we look at how we serve our communities? And I tell clubs all the time when I meet with them, you know, we have this national membership structure. This is just what membership is. Right. And every organization or association has something like that. Mm-hmm. But ultimately what it comes down to is they have to figure out how to best serve their community. If you can get 100 friends of Kansas City that don't want to join X organization, but they just want to come out and serve, then if that's your organization can do that, then you should do it.
Right.
We just have to find more ways to get more people engaged in our communities, and that's what makes us all have a better place to live and to work and to play and so on. And so we're always looking for different ideas. How do we serve our clubs? Mm-hmm. You know, getting club growth, like if you're looking at club growth and stuff like that, I think all, you know, I think I'd be a fool to think that we're just magically going to have all these new clubs pop up everywhere. Just generations, the generation below us, they serve, and the way they serve community is different than what you or I or what our parents did.
They're looking for a different experience. They're looking for a different way to give back. They still want to give back.
Yep.
But it's not quite the same as those traditional models. Yeah.
Yeah. And so figuring out how can we make that work? How can we embed that? You know, sometimes it's easier just to start something completely from scratch than to try and change that 112-year-old organization. Right. That said, we have a lot of great history and we still have a lot of great stuff happening. So it's, you know, when I look at one of our clubs that has 100 members and raises $300,000 a year to support local causes, I'm like, I can't tell them they're doing anything wrong.
No.
You know, they're doing some great work there and they've raised millions of dollars. It's the clubs that are like 15 or 20 and they're like trying to figure out, how do I serve? Mm-hmm. How do I get more people engaged? And, you know, and it's going back to their community and saying, okay, what do you all want us to do? You know, because maybe the services they provide are outdated. Maybe they need to change.
Yeah.
And that will draw more people in. So
it really is that marketing opportunity of hey, find a need and fill that need. Provide that need to the organization.
Yeah. That's business 101.
Business 101.
Right there.
It's true. Absolutely. Well, hey, let's get out of the regular questions and into what we call the lightning round. Are you ready for the lightning round?
I'm ready for the lightning
round. You have no way to know what we might ask, except obviously this first question, I mean, it's a softball. I can't not talk about beer if you're on the podcast, because one of your entrepreneurial ventures is in the craft brewing industry. You want to set up a little bit and tell us what that is?
Sure. I'm one of the partners at Transport Brewing. In Transport, we have two locations, Shawnee and Gardner. And we've been in the Shawnee market for over 5 years, Gardner for about a year and a half now.
Yeah, it's that entrepreneurial bug. You can't get it out of your system. It has to go somewhere. So this is just one of those areas. I want to ask about beer specifically and kind of the role it plays for you. Is it relaxation? Is it I need one after work? Is it great for food pairing? Is it none of those things? And it's just, you know, hey, this is a business and it could be coffee. It could be, you know, anything else.
That's a tough one. I'd probably say, you know, I only drink water and coffee. So, you know, beer and wine are my other two choices. Mm-hmm. And really, I mean, it's a great way to pair work and pleasure, I suppose.
Yeah.
You know, I will say it's funny because when I used to travel for previous jobs, I would always go to coffee shops all day. Work, I have my meetings. Now I'm like, well, I could do a coffee shop in the morning and I can do a brewery in the afternoon. Yeah. I can have a beer. All breweries have good Wi-Fi and I can just work from a brewery in the afternoon. It's kind of nice because I am on the road a lot. But I think honestly, probably like most people, it fits a different role at different times in your life, frankly, at different times in the week or the day.
Or the day. Yeah, you know? For sure.
Today I need that relaxing beer.
Yeah.
Friday night I need the celebratory beer, you know, type thing.
And then on a Monday, it's just, I just need a beer.
Exactly.
You know, any of those things. Do you have like a go-to style that is your, I will always order this?
I know this is very disparate, but I go from an IPA, which I am an IPA guy, and sours. I like two different ends of the spectrum. I tend not to be a light beer fan just because I don't feel like it has the flavor.
It's not doing anything for you.
Yeah, it doesn't do anything for me. But you know, it really kind of just depends. Kind of like people, when I drink wine too, and I'm a white wine drinker in the summer and a red wine drinker in the winter. Yeah. I don't know if it's because it's cold and it's not as cold or what, but beer is kind of, much like other people, it's kind of the same thing. You drink darker, heavier beers maybe in the winter. Yep. You know, the lighter stuff. I do love one beer that we have at Transport, and many of our fans love it too. It's called Car Hop. And it's not typically what I drink anywhere else, but it tastes like a cherry limeade.
Oh,
and
sure.
It is fabulous. Yeah. I mean, and we can't keep it in stock enough. People are like, oh, they got Car Hop back in, and boom, it's gone.
And that's seltzer?
No, it's an actual beer. Yeah. It's just a lighter beer.
Just a lighter beer with cherry.
Cherry limeade. Lime. It's a Berliner. Nice. So it's
A little, just slightly sour than a normal, maybe tart, maybe.
Yes, exactly. And so it's perfect and nice and refreshing, but not refreshing like I'm drinking a Mick Ultra.
Sure. Yeah, no, you're not hydrating necessarily.
Exactly.
You're just enjoying something.
Exactly.
You also have an entrepreneurial background in coffee.
Yeah.
Do those two worlds ever meet for you? Is there such a thing as a good coffee beer?
Yeah, I think there are. We partner with Groundhouse, for instance, Groundhouse Coffee and Gardner. We mm-hmm. do a Groundhouse Brown, and so we've done that. And I think you can find that probably anywhere in the country nowadays.
Yes.
You know, a good coffee porter or coffee stout. I had a coffee shop 20 years ago in Baldwin, Kansas. It was the beginning of my entrepreneurial bug. I was in my late 20s and it was exciting. It was fun. It was before coffee was popular.
Yeah, you're ahead of the curve.
Yeah.
This is much earlier than you would walk out today and go, yeah, there should be a craft coffee shop like next door somewhere.
Yeah. And you know, Baker University's right there. So it was mm-hmm. a good spot. My ex-wife and I, we had bought this coffee shop from the previous owners. And, you know, back then you had to have live music every Friday and Saturday night to get people in. We just didn't have coffee culture. I remember the farmers coming in at the beginning. They're like, $2 for a cup of coffee. If they only knew that today I'm paying $4 for a cup
That's
of coffee,
right. That's right.
You know, they're in stuff like that. So it was a whole different realm. And there wasn't all these different, the different drinks and cold brew and this and that.
Milk choice you've
ever
heard.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, if people had come in and said oat milk, I'm like, I would have been like, I didn't even know you could make milk
That's
out of
right.
oats.
Do they do that? Yeah. I don't even know they do that.
So it was fun. And after a couple of years, my oldest daughter was born. Both of us had full-time jobs. Mm-hmm. We just couldn't do it all. So we sold the coffee shop. Eventually, I think they shut it down. But it was always one of those things I had in the back of my mind. For maybe the future again. I don't know. I've mm-hmm. I've kind of elevated my like from coffee. Now I think future would be like an ice cream shop. So
oh well, that's a good future horizon. I mean,
exactly.
That's something to work toward for sure. Let's leave the beer segment of the lightning round for a second and talk travel, because you travel pretty extensively as well, meeting with the Sertoma clubs around the planet. Do you get to the point in that travel day and hectic where you just can't people anymore and go, no, I can't, no more, I can't talk to another person, I'm spent? What do you get there or not?
Not too much. I really do enjoy people. I get my energy. Mm-hmm. I'm an extrovert naturally, you know.
So you feed off of that.
Yes, I feed off of that, you know, and I get enough because typically my travel is, you know, if I'm going, so for instance, next week I'll be in Florida visiting with clubs, mm-hmm. you know, I'll usually have a morning and afternoon or an afternoon and evening meeting. Sometimes I'll have individual meetings or maybe with donors, so on. But I get that time in between where I can decompress a little bit. And I think that's, for any of us, that's just the important aspect of knowing yourself and what that is. And then there are times where I'm like, ooh, I really do need some people.
Yeah,
you know, I
yeah.
need somebody around. I've had a day, you know, 2 days in the office and nobody's around. And I'm like, wow, I'm kind of going stir crazy.
No one has talked to me.
I haven't had anybody to talk to, you know, type thing. So it's kind of a best of both worlds.
Well, and as long as you can feed off of that, that's the best way to go.
Yeah.
Let's talk about inspiration for a second. As you look back in through history, do you have a teacher or a mentor or someone who gave you some advice that is stuck with you, like to this day? This is, you know, I'll always take this along. I kind of live by that.
You know, I wish I could say I had something like high school going back. Mm-hmm. I mean, I remember having one good teacher who just kind of was there through my parents' divorce. Was a tough time in my life, and I think many of us go through those various times. It mm-hmm. happened to be my senior year in high school, probably not an ideal time. But I had a, you know, teacher who helped me through that. College, I hopped around a lot, and mm-hmm. not proud to say I went to like 5 different colleges. You know, it took me like 8 years to get an undergraduate degree, and then by the time I said I was going to go to grad school, I figured I should probably settle down. But
right.
You know, I tried to just take bits and pieces from different people as I went. Mm-hmm. You know, and I remember certain conversations with, you know, it usually wasn't one individual who said, oh, but it was like a group of individuals at different times said, mm-hmm. hey, you know, when my first job or second job out of college, I was in my mid-20s, and, you know, your ideas and your energy are great, but you can't run through everybody to accomplish them. And I was like, okay, that makes sense. And, you know, it took me a little while to understand what mm-hmm. that looked like. And then now I'm like, oh, okay, I get it. You know, I've got to temper a little bit of that. And sometimes I look at the people around me, I look at my staff, and I love my staff, but you know, I know there's different personalities there. And so I'm always drawing back on individual conversations more than I'm on a particular individual.
Like a person. Yeah, but good advice across the board. Like that's the, you know, you, if you want to make it somewhere, you can't just assert your will across the board.
Exactly.
You need some buy-in, or it will, you know, last as long as you're there.
Yep.
So good advice. As you look back over your career, because you've, you know, had all of the entrepreneurial things in coffee and in beer and in chambers of commerce and in the nonprofit space, if you look back and give yourself some advice, I don't know if it's maybe in the all of the different colleges you were bouncing around to, and you could time travel and give yourself some advice, what kind of advice would you give first year in business you from this perspective here?
Probably take a chance a little bit more. When I was younger, I was actually less likely to take a chance than I am today. Maybe that's because today I feel like, you know, financially I'm comfortable and I've made good decisions to get where I'm at. And, you know, it just naturally makes it easier, I think. And that's the thing. Like, when you're comfortable, you can take a risk and be like, well, if this fails, I'm not giving it all up. Back then, if I had very little money and I took a risk, then I was like, I'm sleeping on the floor where?
Yeah,
who's going to let me sleep on their floor?
That's everything.
You know? Yeah. And so, you know, I didn't take as many risks as a younger person, you know, and sometimes I was like, I think I even talked about how I was going to take the risk and all of this. And then when it was all said and done, I just chickened out.
Yeah.
You know, and I share that with my daughters a lot. Like, you know, my older daughter's a freshman at K-State and I'm off and I want her to go study abroad if she wants to.
Right.
But that was something I always wanted to do. I believe you can get so much from an international experience.
Oh, for sure.
Having traveled around the world and had that opportunity as I got older, I'm like, gosh, I wish I would have done that when I was younger. How might that have shaped other things about me? But I was always afraid. Like, I was afraid I was going to miss out. That fear of missing out. What is they?
With FOMO.
Young kids call it FOMO.
That's right.
I think now I look back, I'm like, my gosh, I think I had that in high school. And I didn't realize that's what it was. I don't think that was a term we used back then, right?
No, there was not a term that we had.
Yeah. So it's just one of those things where I wish I would have taken a little bit more risks back in the day and not worried so much that it wouldn't have panned out.
Yeah, no, that is spectacular advice. I think we've gotten both sides of the coin on this kind of question in the lightning round before, where a lot of entrepreneurs will say, you know, yeah, take more chances, or don't worry about it. It's going to be okay. Go forward. And it's been just a few people who have been on the other side of it say, you know, maybe we should have saved a little bit more before we did, you know, X, whatever that was. But you know, for the most part, I think it's very much a go out there and get it done kind of mentality. Well, I'll take you out of the lightning round. Well done. There's nothing to it. There are no problems in the lightning round. Let me have you tell everybody where they can find more information if they want to know more about Sertoma, if they want to get in touch with their local club or however they'd like to help out. Where can they find you? Where do they go?
Sure. So the easiest place is we have two websites, actually. We have Sertoma.org, and then we also have HearingAidDonations.org. Very straightforward. We actually have a second organization I don't usually talk about. It's called Hearing Charities of America. A lot of people find us that way. Mm-hmm. We're in the process internally of actually doing away with it because essentially we're the same staff, same people, same program. It will all be under Sertoma's umbrella. But that HearingAidDonations.org, you can go and you can actually learn more about the donations we take. You know, I failed to mention, for instance, we take all the electronics. We partner here with a local electronic recycling. We recycled last year over 1 ton of electronic recycling.
Wow.
You know, that comes shipped into us. And so we do things like that with some of the other programs that I mentioned. And then, you know, and you can go on there, you can find a club if you want to get involved with a club. We actually have a national membership model, so you can actually join Sertoma if you just want to support what we do. What I tell people all the time when they're like, well, what if there's anything? I'm like, you know what? The Hearing Aid Project is an easy way to get involved.
Right.
If you know somebody who's got hearing aids, if you could be a collection point, if you want to learn more, if you want to get engaged, if you know an audiologist or hearing instrument specialist that would be willing to work with us, we're an easy organization to work with and work for. And we love to partner with people in the community to do good things.
Spectacular. Jason Camus, the executive director of Sertoma International, thanks for being with us today.
Thanks, Jeff.
We'll get it to your business.
And that is our show. Thanks to our guests from Sertoma International, and thank you for listening to the Small Business Miracles podcast. Remember to subscribe, leave us a 5-star rating and review, drop us a line on the website at eagadv.com if you have any thoughts. Until then, we'll be out here helping entrepreneurs with another Small Business Miracle.
All right. Talking about your strategies and all the capabilities, building all your hopes and dreams and all the possibilities. It ain't rocket surgery, but maybe it is. Oh, come on down, we're gonna sit around, we're gonna get into your business. Get into your business, that's right, get into your business. Oh, we'll get into your business.